In this hour, we've got a special panel discussion on sequestration. We'll discuss coping strategies for contractors.
And we've got three special guests with us this morning. Scott Lewis is president and CEO of PS Partnerships. He brings together product vendors and systems integrators in the federal market. And Tim Larkins is manager of market intelligence at the Immix Group, which represents hundreds of technology vendors on GSA schedules and other contract vehicles. And Cameron Luthy is senior budget analyst with Bloomberg Government. BGov provides news, data, and analysis about the federal market to contractors and federal agencies. Gentlemen, great to have you in studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so let's go to the first question right away. We've got a lot to talk about today. Tell us what sequestration and the market in general looks like generally from the perspective of what you do. Cameron, why don't we start with you?
Sure. So it's been a roller coaster year for federal agencies and for the contracting community. And if you think about it, right, the agency started the year under a continuing resolution with the specter of sequester hanging over their heads. Then the fiscal cliff deal sort of put off the pain until March. And during that time period, you had some agencies spending like crazy in the first quarter, then putting the brakes on in the second quarter, and then trying to ramp back up again. So it's going to be a bumpy ride from here to the end of the year.
All right, so roller coaster. And Tim Larkins, with a broad view of many, many, many small and large technology vendors, what are you seeing?
Well, of course, the sequestration cuts were scheduled to be $1.2 trillion over a nine-year period. And realistically, that seems so drastic over the last, 6-8 months. But that only represents 2% of total federal expenditures over the next 9 years. So all this talk about how devastating the cuts are and how it's going to result in the hollow force of our military and how government agencies aren't going to be able to function anymore, it's really just a lot of political theater. I'm seeing across most of our clients that their revenue projections are pretty much in line with what they were about a year ago.
So they're buying.
Exactly.
People are making orders and fulfilling their requirements.
Believe it or not, the world still continues to turn.
All right, Scott, and you talk to a lot of technology vendors, but also a lot of the big systems, the traditional beltway bandits, if you will, the systems integrators. What's going on there?
Well, I'm not sure whether sequestration has forced this or not, but probably has to some extent. You're starting to see a lot of the systems integrators becoming more lean, focusing on specific lines of business and not varying from that at all. And sort of good news and bad news for some of their major alliances with the larger vendors like the Ciscos and the EMCs. They are bringing those alliances together, and now they'll say that they're building repeatable solutions to take to market versus before, where they would talk more like that they were independent, they weren't representing or weren't aligned to technologies on an ongoing basis. CSC is a pretty good example of that. They've developed 5 strict lines of businesses, and they're riding those alliances pretty hard. And they're even, I wouldn't say putting quotas to it per se, but they're really looking at forecasting with them a lot more than before.
And, you know, all of this is really interesting when we take into account that Lockheed Martin, the government's biggest contractor, last week, they posted what they called higher than expected revenue for the quarter. And there were analysts who were saying, well, that's because the effect of sequestration really hasn't been felt on contractors. So, Cameron, I want to toss that question to you. You described a roller coaster. So what is the effect on contractors now of that roller coaster, and what is it going to be for, say, the next year?
So I think it's really important to disaggregate, Emily. The big 5 defense firms are in a different sort of position compared to, say, professional services companies. So the big 5 have, first of all, the pain of sequester is spread out over time, because the government doesn't pay them the full amount for an airplane or an aircraft carrier up front. Second, the pain of sequestration on the professional services, where you can do a contract mod and maybe it's a staff augmentation. You've got 100 people sitting on the government site. All of a sudden, they say, well, we can get by with 10 less. Now it's 90. So the impact is much more immediate for a professional services company of sequestration. The other thing is that, to be fair, not just the original equipment manufacturers, but also the professional services companies have been doing things to cut costs, which improves their financial position in the face of potential cuts to their revenue.
So that's not necessarily because of sequestration, but perhaps because they knew that, I mean, there's a general, we're still in a pretty rough economic time. So is that just a result of the times we live in?
Well, I think there are multiple variables, demand, consumer demand. I mean, think about the sectors that Tim and Scott work. These are companies that do business not just with the federal government, but also with the private sector.
And Scott, I was a little surprised that you said that systems integrators seem to be sticking to the knitting, to their core markets. I would think at a time like this, they would be trying to find everything they can get their arms around, like, you know, cloud computing and some of these other new areas emerging.
Well, that
obviously,
is that,
everyone can't build airplanes.
Right. But, well, cloud computing is part of a standard offering now for all SIs. There have been a lot of cases where SIs will bid on things that their core competency just hasn't been there in the past. I think that's kind of gone away. There's not a lot of new money. There's existing money, and the money's pretty stable, but it's not allowing for new opportunities. Most of the effort really is the contract that you have and trying to win task orders off of that, and most of the effort is also keeping the contracts that you have. The competition is getting a lot harder out there, especially on recompetes.
Yeah, so that means, they're sticking to the knitting both in contract vehicles and into their subject matter expertise, in other words.
Right. The knitting is still around information technology, which is my world anyway. And they're focusing on lines of business within that as opposed to trying to take on new business or being something that they're not. Like mobile computing and cloud computing and big data and data center consolidation, those are all kind of standard offerings that most SIs have. You get beyond that, and most SIs are not going to take on something new and different.
And most of its task orders, you're not seeing as many full and open type of competitions or just greenfield opportunities.
Very little, very little. It's task orders on existing contracts. You're starting to see some mobile opportunities, but those are mostly for kind of the trial or the test of 100 or 200 people within the agency. But even those, even some of the growth areas like mobility, you don't see a lot of major programs in that.
So, Tim, that sounds like a good opportunity for people that have contracts and for the agencies that operate those contracts. I wanted to ask you about what you're seeing on GSA schedules. What are activity levels like there? Based on what you said earlier, I'm imagining that it's pretty much as usual. But tell us how GSA is comparing with other vehicles.
Sure. Well, product-wise, you know that Image Group helps technology companies, specifically COTS manufacturers, do business with the government. So, as you know, we're pretty plugged into what's happening from a product perspective. And today, GSA accounts for about 12% of total government spending, and on GSA Schedule 70, which of course is the IT schedule, Schedule 70 spent about $15.3 billion on IT last year. Now, what's interesting is that we've seen a steady decline in spending on GSA Schedule 70 over the past 3 years. So since 2010, we've seen a decline of about 3.5%, but we've actually seen a 9% increase in spending on software. Now, I think this speaks to the government's desire to buy best value COTS solutions to help them find, you know, more operational efficiencies. Also, I think a lot of those product-focused vehicles, maybe with the exception of SUP, so if you think like CIO SP3 or even better ECS2, they've been pretty underutilized over the years, so there's some momentum behind the idea of more heavily leveraging product-focused vehicles, and I think that's going to be great news for our clients' top line.
So buying stuff.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's what they're doing a lot of.
And you know, we've been seeing that to piggyback off what Cameron said a second ago, a lot of the large services contractors, not just Lockheed, they're doing pretty well revenue wise. I think their combat systems, they took a cut. Their combat system sales took a cut as the military drew out of Iraq and Afghanistan. But the aerospace divisions really experienced some pretty healthy increases, which led to overall increases in net earnings for the largest players. And on the product side, I think a lot of the larger, more established companies, they knew how to prepare for this perfect disaster of CR and sequestration. So they started laying off some middle management. They started cutting some redundant programs. The public companies started buying some of their stock back to increase their earnings per share. So the majority of them at least were close to their projections for their net income.
I just want to be – we're going to go to a short break, but before we do, can you expand on this? And I actually want to toss this out to you. What about layoffs at contractors? Are there any companies that have said, hey, because of sequestration, we've got to lay people off?
I've looked at – Cameron?
Yeah. I'll take a stab at that. I've looked at it briefly. Most of the layoffs, if you calculate them as a percentage of the total workforce, they're relatively modest. And, in fact, I think that fits into a larger pattern of bet hedging. companies waiting to see how this is going to play out before they make big decisions about mergers, acquisitions, divestitures, and hiring.
Okay, great. We're going to go to short break. You're listening to a Federal Drive discussion on how federal contractors are coping with sequestration. Our guests today are Scott Lewis, President and CEO of PS Partnerships, Tim Larkins, Manager of Market Intelligence at Immix Group, and Cameron Luthy, a Senior Budget Analyst with Bloomberg Government. It's 9:17. I'm Emily Kopp along with Tom Temin. You're listening to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Information Management Minute, provided by Iron Mountain.
The federal government is improving its management of real property assets. The Office of Management and Budget issued guidance for agencies to institute a freeze-the-footprint policy, holding real estate space to 2012 baseline levels for domestic office and warehousing inventory. Agencies will have to offset any growth with corresponding reductions while providing annual reports to keep current space investments in line with OMB's guidance to keep these costs in check and consider outsourcing for their storage needs, such as temporary business records.
Is your agency looking to realize better efficiencies and cost savings through a proven information management program? Iron Mountain stores and protects billions of information assets, including paper records, backup tapes, electronic files, and medical data, helping federal agencies manage their entire information lifecycle. Learn more at ironmountain.com/radio.
Recently on Federal News Radio's Federal Tech Talk, sponsored by AT&T.
We are speaking with Blake Hall. He's one of the co-founders of ID.me, and we're talking about single sign-on.
We really want it to be a very user-friendly digital identity network. You know, just as PayPal has become the consumer standard for payments, we would like to become the consumer standard for digital identity. And that's why we've populated another attribute that the brands who use us can verify on their online channels.
Secure Mobile Government is here.
Evaluate a department budget at a metro station.
You can now work out in the field with a smartphone and the safety and security of the AT&T network. AT&T extends the cyber defense perimeter of your agency's mobile workforce.
Study new employment stats while teleworking.
Your security is predictive and preventive. Go to att.com/gov/secure to learn how AT&T Mobile Security can safely connect you to both your agency and constituents. AT&T, rethink possible.
Here's Ari Baranoff, assistant to the special agent in charge at the Secret Service, on the Cyber Imperative panel, sponsored by Worldwide Technology and NetApp.
Our strategy is to focus on mainly the professional hackers, individuals out there making enormous amounts of money, and in many cases reinvesting some of the ill-gotten gains into developing new capabilities, attack tools, infrastructure. So it is quite challenging. The more they make, the better they get.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com, keyword imperative.
Data security threats are increasing in number and sophistication. Is your agency protected? Cybersecurity experts at Worldwide Technology can help. Worldwide Technology delivers the tools, technology, and expertise you need to secure your entire IT infrastructure. By leveraging NetApp's comprehensive portfolio of cybersecurity technologies, Worldwide Technology can help you protect critical assets, enhance visibility and control, and ensure compliance. Learn how Worldwide Technology and NetApp can help your agency. Visit WWT.com.
This afternoon on In Depth with Francis Rose, day three of our special report, The Private Side of Sequestration, a close look at contractors dealing with the Defense Department. And the Senate Budget Committee wants the bottom line on sequestration at DOD. Former Navy Undersecretary Bob Work, now at the Center for New American Security, tells you what he told Congress. That and lots more on In Depth with Francis Rose, this afternoon after Washington Nationals baseball on 1500 AM, and all afternoon long on federalnewsradio.com.
It's 9:21. Welcome back to the Federal Drive discussion on how federal contractors are coping with sequestration here on 1500 AM. I'm Tom Temin, along with Emily Kopp. Our guests this morning are Scott Lewis, President and CEO of PS Partnerships, Tim Larkins, Manager of Market Intelligence at the Immix Group, and Cameron Luthy, Senior Budget Analyst with Bloomberg Government. And before the break, we were talking about the what contractors are doing internally to respond to the situation, the business situation they're facing. And Scott, let's talk to you now about the idea of layoffs, changes in management structure in the systems integration community. There seems to be some activity there.
Yep. Well, sequestration and just the way the market's changing, where the contractors, it's not all about putting bodies on a contract anymore. In fact, they're trying to reduce that to cut cost. But by looking at the market space, you're seeing companies like SAIC breaking up into two different companies, and that forces people to be leaving the organization. CSC went through a restructure, and people have left that organization also. Same with Booz Allen. So you're starting to see, and L3, for example, is gone into three different companies. And there's a lot of reasons behind that, not just sequestration. But the way the market is changing, the fact that the government market doesn't have a high growth spike happening. So they're doing restructuring, which is giving buyouts and people leaving and laying people off to restructure financially to continue with the profits and hitting the targets within their within their markets and the targets on Wall Street.
And Tim, at some of the product vendors, are you seeing changes in the way they go to market or maybe they change their business development tactics? What's going on with those types of companies?
Absolutely. So from a product's perspective, you know, I think it's forcing manufacturers to really just assess their priorities for the year and figure out how they can make it through the doldrums of March, April, and May, because whether or not they hit their number for the year is going to be largely dependent upon how successful of a July, August, and September they have. Companies are really going to have to start figuring out if that 30, 60, 90-day quota system is sustainable in the long run, because procurements are just taking a lot longer. Also, I think companies are being forced to make hard decisions around personnel. We've got some analysts suggesting that overall spending on IT contracts is expected to decline as much as 8% this year. So we're looking at maybe $110 billion on IT contracts instead of $120 billion. So while the companies that manufacture the, quote, must-have solutions are still in pretty good shape, those companies that make the nice-to-have products are hurting a bit, and they're going to have to figure out a new approach to their BD and their capture alignment.
So have people laid off their business development staffs or reduced them and say, hey, Immix, you do it for us, or that kind of thing?
We've seen some restructuring with some of our clients and heavier reliance on a force multiplier like Immix Group.
And Cameron, you said earlier that some companies were postponing these big decisions like mergers and acquisitions because of sequestration. But overall, are you seeing the market change at all in terms of the types of companies there are that are vying for government business because of sequestration and the other economic hardships going on?
I don't think we've seen a lot of companies exit the federal space yet. There are companies that, as I said before, exhibiting bet hedging behavior. So if you have a marginal dollar to invest and you do business with both the commercial sector and the government, you might put that marginal dollar on the commercial side. Analogous to that would be if you do most of your business, you do some business with the defense side and some with the civil side of the government. You got to think about where your long-term potential might lie.
And so when that's the case, then you might even find some acquisitions going on totally outside of the federal space. Have you seen much of that among the companies that you follow?
If you look at mergers and acquisitions writ large, not just in the government space, I think there are a lot of companies sitting on piles of cash. There are a lot of companies sitting on significant backlog of orders, funded and unfunded. But there's been this uncertainty about taxes, you know, things that have nothing to do with federal spending that have to some degree caused companies to wait and see.
All right. Well, on that note, we're going to take a short break. You're going to have to wait and see. You're listening to a Federal Drive discussion on how federal contractors are coping with sequestration. And our guests today are Cameron Luthy, Senior Budget Analyst with Bloomberg Government, Tim Larkins, Manager of Market Intelligence at the Immix Group, and Scott Lewis, President and CEO of PS Partnerships. I'm Emily Kopp, along with Tom Temin on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Uber conferences is free. You basically decide who you want in the phone call, and you set up the time for the phone call. Like, I want to make a conference call at 2 o'clock tomorrow. And you could put all these people in a group, so you could easily just add the group. And then what happens, at the time of the conference call, Uber call calls everybody, and it also sends them an email, and they're in the conference.
Huh. Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
The virtualization expert provided by VMware.
In a recent study, federal IT leaders said telework and delivering desktop computing are their top reasons for using cloud computing. With VMware, agency standard PCs can be quickly provisioned, deployed, and managed from the data center or the cloud. Personnel can securely access familiar resources from any device.
VMware customers have saved up to 45% on desktop costs, increased employee satisfaction, and improved continuity of operations.
What do you want to be when you're older?
When I'm older, I want to be a singer. That's my goal.
An organizer of like do-gooders.
I want to be a media mogul.
When I'm older, I want to be anything but the one that doesn't fit in, the one that people don't love.
Everyone deserves a dream.
But some of us are depressed.
Anxious.
Angry.
Scared.
Don't feel like ourselves.
If that's you, say something.
Talk to someone. People will listen. Add your voice at OKToTalk.org. OKToTalk.org.
Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Veterans, are you online? The Department of Veterans Affairs will celebrate 10 years of online access for veterans through My Health eVet, VA's personal health record. To recognize this milestone, VA invites all veterans to register and get online by Veterans Day, November 11, 2013. Transform your healthcare and enroll for your personal health record at www.myhealth.va.gov to begin your journey to see, share, and learn more about connected healthcare. With My Health eVet, veterans renew VA prescriptions online, access their VA health information, receive notifications for VA appointments, communicate online with their providers using secure messaging, and can even see their VA notes. My Health eVet helps patients become better partners in their health care. To enroll today, visit myhealth.va.gov. That's myhealth.va.gov. My Health eVet, celebrating 10 years of online access.
This is Lifelines from NIH Radio with Dr. Willie Underwood of the Roswell Park Cancer Institute.
More and more people in the United States are living for a long time after being diagnosed and treated for cancer. Survivorship begins when cancer is discovered, and it continues for a lifetime. African American cancer survivors can experience a number of ongoing social, psychological, and financial challenges and concerns, some of which may be different from those experienced by whites. The quality of a patient's life can depend on identifying these problems early and addressing them effectively. For people who want to learn more about cancer survivorship, an NCI booklet can help. Facing Forward, Life After Cancer Treatment. A companion booklet for caregivers is also available when someone you love has completed cancer treatment.
Lifelines from NIH Radio, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
If you're not reading federalnewsradio.com, you're missing out on the most read website in the federal market, featuring federal news and information that affects you every day. Here's what readers are saying about federalnewsradio.com.
I get absolutely the latest news on time.
FederalNewsRadio.com gives federal government workers news about what affects them. I don't have to wade through local news to get to what directly affects me at work.
Make it your daily read for the news you need. FederalNewsRadio.com.
9:30, welcome back to our Federal Drive discussion on how federal contractors are coping with sequestration here on 1500 AM. I'm Tom Temin, along with Emily Kopp. Our guests today are Scott Lewis, President and CEO of PS Partnerships, Cameron Luthy, Senior Budget Analyst with Bloomberg Government, and Tim Larkins, Manager of Market Intelligence at the Immix Group. And before the break, we were talking about the mix of contract vehicles that the government is using. And Tim, you were saying that there's a little bit of decline in GSA schedules. Give us some more on what the total mix looks like and how that's changing of vehicles that the government is using right now as times get tight.
Mm-hmm. Well, this year we've seen a continued reliance on IDIQs, which isn't surprising because these types of multi-award vehicles, these task order-driven vehicles, allow the agencies to kind of spend the way that they want to spend. We've also seen an uptick in BPA activity. For example, if you look at DOD's ESI, the Enterprise Software Initiative, Immix has actually been the largest ESI vendor over the past 4 years because of the multiple BPAs we've won from that initiative. I think the move towards BPAs is mostly due to the fact that agencies can just enjoy larger discounts from list price when they want to buy software. In terms of sequestration, changing kind of activity levels on these contract vehicles, we did see a bit of an uptick in solicitation activity earlier in the calendar year. But lately it's been a little bit slow in regards to RFPs or quality RFPs anyway on the product side. Back in March or April, I think things got a little bit hairy with delayed awards. I think just the Army alone had something like $20 billion worth of procurements that were delayed because contract offices were just waiting to see how sequestration was going to impact their budget accounts. You know, more recently we've seen delays in awards for some of those huge contracts like Army's ITES 3H, Air Force's NetSense 2, Navy's NGEN, but those have been more due to protests and new requirements as opposed to budget cuts and sequestration. But there absolutely have been some larger contracts of note, like DISA's cloud storage contract that was delayed specifically due to sequestration.
All right, so a mix again here. It's kind of hard to attribute all of these phenomena to one single thing. Scott, what about this idea of lowest price technically acceptable seems to be coming into the market? I imagine the integrators must hate that.
Yeah, it's very real. There used to be best value involved where you could be creative with your offerings and show that this could be this particular contract, if you award it to me, could add much more value at same price than if you award it to this other guy that doesn't have any unique capabilities that I think I can bring to the table, so to speak. So best value is riding really hard right now, and the problem that I see with it, first of all, it's reducing, I think, the quality of the contracts that are being awarded because they're bringing in the lowest price people that they possibly can to get away with performing on the contract. But it's really killed innovation, I think, from the SI community to take a look at a business problem and trying to come up with a unique solution for that that can reduce costs and improve, the value of what they're bringing to the table. So the SIs are just responding to the requirements on the RFP or on the task order requirement, and that's it, done. And I'm going to bring my lowest price in. I'm going to do exactly what you asked me to do and nothing more.
And so when you see that LPTA, that always sounds like golf to me for some reason. When you see that LPTA, does that mean that the contracting officer is in control and not the program person, do you think?
For the most part, it's all about cost, and budgets are tight. They're not growing, and it's just been accepted now within government to take the lowest price, period. And on recompetes, which is the biggest battle right now, just trying to keep the contract you have, the mindset has changed a lot within these contractors. It's reducing the number of people on the contract and trying to improve the performance. I think that opens up a door a little bit. Getting off track here a little bit, for new alliances and new teaming partners. Can I now align myself with a technology or a better partner to reduce my costs on this recompete?
And I want to return to that point, but before we do, Cameron, I wanted to ask you about a new phenomenon that seems to be coming in, and that's lowest price technically acceptable. Technically capable, not acceptable, but capable, which means Bill Gormley the other day was commenting, the former GSA contracts administrator. He was saying that means if you're alive, you can probably do this. Have you heard that one more?
I don't think that's a widespread phenomenon, but I think it's more of a the canary in the coal mine, a signpost, if you will, of the enormous pressure government program managers and contracting officers are under to cut costs.
So let me ask you that. Building on that, what is a company to do when they know that the government is just looking for something, maybe even a cookie cutter solution, but something on the cheap? Then how does a company strategize for that? Would they save perhaps their more creative and more highly paid, experienced people for some private business instead and put more junior people on that? What's the strategy, Scott?
Depending on the type of contract it is, it's relooking at my alliances. Should I continue with the technology partners that I have on this, or can I look at something that's less expensive, but also can meet my requirements? And it's also bringing in people at a lower hourly wage, which is a challenge when you're trying to hire people on the street now. It increases the competition for where do I want to work. I could go work for a contractor and make quite a bit more money per hour, but that's now being reduced in a lot of cases. So maybe I'm not going to go work for Lockheed Martin. Maybe I'm going to work for a smaller company, or I'm going to work in the commercial market space. So I think it's reducing a little bit the talent pool that you're able to get to put on a contract when you win it, because you have to keep your costs down, and you're not going to get the quality of people that you might have gotten a couple years ago on a contract.
So, Tim, how does that play between product vendors that might be competitive, and one is allied with a certain company, a certain channel partner or integrator on a certain contract, and then one can come along and say, well, we have the same type of box, but we can do it for 25% less? That seems to set up some conflict among product vendors, and I guess the channel carrier doesn't really care. They'll just go with the cheapest one. How do you mitigate that?
Well, I think the most important thing for product manufacturers to remember is you need to be involved in shaping the deal as early on as possible. I think people tend to forget that we can't just take a meeting with a CIO and think that our solution is going to be baked into the requirements later on in the process. Once that RFP comes out, you better believe there are going to be other companies that have gotten their foot in the door and brought a better value to the table. So being able to talk to the program managers and even better the end users early at the RFI phase is going to allow product manufacturers to set that technically acceptable bar. That way, no other product is going to be good enough to meet the government's needs, and no one else can undercut you in terms of price.
So in other words, they would say, well, to be technically acceptable has to be gold-plated, and then if that's the way it works out and you're the gold-plated guy, then you're okay.
Absolutely.
We're going to take a short break. You're listening to a Federal Drive discussion on how contractors are coping with sequestration. Our guests today are Tim Larkins, Manager of Market Intelligence at the Immix Group, Scott Lewis, President and CEO of PS Partnerships, and Cameron Luthy, Senior Budget Analyst with Bloomberg Government. It's 9:38. I'm Emily Kopp along with Tom Temin on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Hey, what you doing?
I'm online looking at a satellite view of the neighborhood.
Huh. What's with all the dots?
Green means it's for sale, yellow means sold.
Gotcha. Hey, is that the house we looked at?
Yeah, I love it. Maybe we should talk to a realtor, make an offer?
Did that house just go from green to yellow?
Yeah, sold, right before our very eyes.
Buyers are in the market, but there's a shortage of homes for sale. If you've been thinking about selling, now may be the right time. Every market's different. Call a realtor today or visit realtor.com. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Hamid Jafari eradicated polio in India. John McKinnon rescued 160 victims of child pornography. And Kevin Geis saved the Air Force $1 billion in energy costs. The list of federal employees making a real difference goes on and on. 31 individuals and teams of feds are being recognized for their work. Each has been named a Service to America Medal finalist. Hear interviews with each of the nominees and learn more about what makes them tick at federalnewsradio.com. Search Service to America.
Management Friday on Federal News Radio. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's Workforce Perspective on Inside Government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
It's 9:40. Welcome back to our Federal Drive discussion on how federal contractors are coping with sequestration here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Emily Kopp along with Tom Temin. Our guests are Scott Lewis, the president and CEO of PS Partnerships, Tim Larkins, manager of market intelligence at the Immix Group, and Cameron Luthy, senior budget analyst with Bloomberg Government. Now, Cameron, earlier in the show, you mentioned that sequestration is not like falling off a cliff. It's more like a roller coaster. And I want to ask you, what does the roller coaster look like from here?
Well, it's been a jerky ride, and I think it's going to be continue that sort of pattern. So as companies head into the fourth quarter, I've done a little data poll or two. As is expected in a normal year, the government puts a lot of money on contracts in the fourth quarter. If anything, that's going to be exaggerated this year. So if the government was holding back earlier in the year, now it's going to be full throttle from here until September 30. And if the contracting shops do their usual yeoman work, they're going to be working long and hard to try and get this done so that they don't end the year with money left over. But that also speaks to where the roller coaster goes into the first quarter. If you think about it, companies have the opportunity now in the fourth quarter to set themselves up going into the first quarter of the next fiscal year when undoubtedly the government will be operating under a continuing resolution, meaning no new starts for standalone contracts.
So what you're saying is there's going to be a big rise at the end of this year, and then back in October, oof, the dip.
Yeah, I think that's right, and particularly because nobody will know on October 1 exactly what the Congress is going to do with regard to sequestration and the lower caps for 14.
So it's going to be hard to keep those cookies down. And, Tim, I wanted to ask you, years ago when I was at Government Computer News, we had charts showing advertisers how really federal spending is quite even across the year. There's a little bit of a uptick in the fourth quarter, tried to make sure that our advertising revenues were evened out over the years. But this year, it really does seem like the fourth quarter is going to be in stark contrast to the prior quarters. What are you actually seeing?
I think the government tends to spend around 25% to 30% of its budget in the last 3 months of the fiscal year, actually.
So, well, 25% in the last quarter is 25% and 25%.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I would suggest that this year, though, we're probably looking at closer to 35% to 40% of the total spend. And I think going back to the roller coaster analogy, it's interesting because some of our clients are seeing that they're still landing some of those big whales, but as a whole, agencies have just been increasingly hesitant to award those larger procurements. I think, you know, companies are concerned because they haven't been winning as many big deals as they used to. And I think this might just be a paradigm shift. I think things are going to even out eventually as industry gets used to this idea that we're going to be seeing smaller and more incremental purchases from the government. And we're going to have to get used to agencies just not picking up as many option years as they used to and being considerably more stringent when they're reviewing their proposals.
Scott?
I think from a product perspective, I would agree. Most of the year-end spending that I've always seen or dealt with has been more agencies buying a technology, cutting PO, GSA schedule, soup, I'm going to buy some stuff. From an SI perspective, I don't think they're looking at much of a spike at all towards the end of the year. There may be a couple task orders that might get awarded and shot out and awarded by then, but you still have to perform in the contract to get paid. And in the ones that I've been talking to over the past few weeks, they're not expecting to see any rise in revenue between now and October 1. It's mostly the product firms are the ones that are positioning themselves for that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, integrators work on long cycles anyway, and so if you look at it in those terms, already the 2015 budget requests are into the White House for whatever cogitating they do over the next several months, and then so agencies are really working on 2016 at this point. So if you're a big integrator, aren't you really thinking about what you can influence for 2016 at this point?
Yeah, you're there influencing anywhere from 1 to 2 to 3 years out now. There, you know, if it's even if you're in there talking about I want to be on your team, if the RFP is coming out in the next few months, you're already out. You know, you're already out. They already have their team put together, and in some cases, you might hear integrators say 6 to 8 months. I've already put my team together, so they're always focusing and investing on a year or two out.
Well, so does that give them some sort of defense then if, say, sequestration were to continue for another year, which it looks, you know, people say at least with regards to defense that could happen?
Yeah, well, they're working on activities that may or may not become an opportunity. They're talking to agencies about what they hope to do, what they would like to do over the next few years, how they might want to consolidate, how they might want to improve their processes and this side or the other, and they're positioning themselves to hopefully be looked at as someone who could add some strong value, assuming this turns into some kind of an opportunity or procurement. Or can I move this into an existing contract vehicle that I already have with you, the agency, and add that to my contract? But these are major activities, really major undertakings. They're not small transaction type of things. These are major changes of the way agencies might be doing business somewhere over the next 1 or 2 years that they're trying to position themselves for.
So, Tim, for the product vendors, and that would imply they have to really look at two things. One, getting what they can for the rest of this fiscal year, but also not taking their eye off the ball down the road because they have to keep that pipeline for the distant future to keep their company going.
Mm-hmm. Without a doubt. You know, I think the bottom line for our product vendors is that you really need to make sure that you're selling a solution that the customer wants. You have to be able to show them what the ROI is going to be for the coming year. Because if the customers can't realize some efficiencies and cost savings in the short term, you're really just going to be a nice to have. And in this environment, unfortunately, nice to haves just aren't going to make the cut. Now, I'm not one to give into the whole gloom and doom idea that sequestration is bringing the tent down over our heads, as if you might have assumed that from my earlier comments. But I like to forecast something a little bit more bright and fuzzy. You know, we still have an $80 billion IT budget that we're dealing with here. Arguably, we're working with $120 to $150 billion addressable market, meaning, you know, total spend on IT through other budgets like RDT&E, C4ISR, Intel, and IT that's embedded into weapon systems. And again, we've got a lot of money that's left over for the rest of this fiscal year to be spent.
So, Cameron, does that sound about right to you from the Bloomberg total data analysis standpoint?
Yeah, when we look at federal spending and on contracts specifically, because remember, some federal spending is for grants, so not relevant to this conversation, there's still a lot of money to be made, and there will be some companies that are smarter and more nimble and more agile and will adapt, and some that won't. And maybe we can talk a little bit about some of the things that we would advise companies to think about as we move forward.
All right, we're going to take a short break. You are listening to a Federal Drive discussion on how federal contractors are coping with sequestration. Our guests today are Scott Lewis, President and CEO of PS Partnerships, Cameron Luthi, Senior Budget Analyst with Bloomberg Government, and Tim Larkins, Manager of Market Intelligence at the Immix Group. And after the short break, we'll have our final wrap-up comments. I'm Tom Temin, along with Emily Kopp, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Tommy Huang, CIO Merit Systems Protection Board, on the Real Deal on Digital Government panel sponsored by Accenture.
All this has really worked out well. So one example is during Hurricane Sandy, for instance, when the D.C. government shut down, we were able to have employees support our other regional offices that were still operating and needed support from us, and they were able to do that from home, teleworking through the mobility access.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Accenture, high performance delivered. It's how we help clients take on their most complex challenges. We helped process $650 billion in benefit payments for U.S. federal organizations. And we helped eliminate $348 million in U.S. federal fleet, inventory, and freight costs. With unmatched capabilities across defense, public safety, and civilian, Accenture consistently delivers results at speed. To learn more, visit Accenture.com/federal or follow us on Twitter at Accenture Fed.
Hey everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's oldest and therefore longest running food and wine variety show.
Next Sunday, August 4th, it is time to talk about D.C. Beer Week. It's the celebration of good beer in the nation's capital, and we'll be talking to everybody who's involved in beer in the D.C. metro area. D.C. Beer Week is August 11th through the 18th.
That's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday at 11 right here on 1500 AM.
At BAE Systems, we work relentlessly to stay ahead of the bad guys. One significant challenge every organization faces is cyber threats. That's why our experts leverage the world's most advanced cyber operations technologies, enabling us to preempt network breaches in minutes, not days. Knowing our work makes a difference inspires us every day. We're there on the next front. That's BAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at baesystems.com/nextfront.
Life is filled with uncertainty, military life especially. AFMA can help you breathe easy through it all. Since 1879, AFMA has helped military families with low-cost military life insurance and the best survivor assistance. We're experts at helping you manage the complexities of military life and securing your family's financial well-being. Call 1-877-398-2263 today or go to aafmaa.com to see how we can help you.
Hey, Mom, why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
It's 9:51. You're listening to the Federal Drive, and welcome back to our special discussion on how federal contractors are coping with sequestration here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Emily Kopp, along with Tom Temin. Our guests are Scott Lewis, the President and CEO of PS Partnerships, Tim Larkins, Manager of Market Intelligence at the Immix Group, and Cameron Luthi, Senior Budget Analyst with Bloomberg Government.
And you're losing your voice there a little bit today, Emily Kopp, recovering from kid-induced cold here. So in the time we have left, and we only have a few minutes, I would like to get to our guests' ideas on basically what should contractors do. What's the bottom line advice that you have for them as they face the sequestration, the fourth quarter, and the prospect of continuing resolution? Cameron Luthy, we'll start with you.
So if I had to bet, I'd say that the continuing resolution that will be in operation on October 1 will probably run to somewhere near Christmas, not coincidentally, because the sequestration, if it were to happen, would be 15 days after the end of the session. That comes to January. So companies need to not only work hard with their program managers and contracting officers to get money on contract now in the fourth quarter, but they need to do it smartly. Not just quickly, but smartly, so that they're positioned with on multiple award contracts with existing task orders so that they can continue to do work in the first quarter of 2014.
And how can contractors help their contracting officers make sure that the money they spend is okay to spend?
Well,
there's some
you
gotta fudge
get,
in there.
Sometimes you got to have the lawyers to say, yes, this is not a new start, because that's the constraint under a continuing resolution.
Okay. Meaning you have to have really the authority based on something in the law that's applying for the year in which the resolution is continuing from.
Right, right. Because if you don't do it in 13, you can't do it in 14 under a CR.
All right. So that sounds like that's something that people are hard at work at right now, because they've got just a couple more months to seal the deal, as it were. Tim, tell us from your perspective, what are the smart companies doing to position themselves for a possible CR or, you know, another roller coaster in the next year?
Sure. Again, I think the most important point for product manufacturers to remember is just ensure that you're showing the short-term ROI and you're demonstrating how your solution is allowing the agency to complete their mission within their budget and within their allotted time frame. I think there are a couple of critical questions that contractors always need to be asking their customers. You know, one, what budget account is funding this investment? Two, are the requirements locked down and solid? And three, is the paperwork done? Are all the I's dotted and T's crossed? Because if the answer to any of these three questions is no, you should not feel comfortable forecasting that deal.
Yeah, it's kind of like what Henry Ford II said to his aide. He said, if the answer to one of my questions is no, then I don't need you anymore. So there's a lot of expediting that really has to come on, just some hard head work with pencil and paper and telephone.
Without a doubt.
And do you find that your suppliers plan to stay up late and all this kind of thing, you know, and make sure that the order from Guam gets in under somebody's clock that's midnight for the end of the fiscal year?
When it's crunch time, everybody's drinking a lot of coffee and not sleeping very much.
All right, and keep those pencils sharp. And Scott Lewis, final word this morning.
I'll take it from the vendor and the SI perspective. If you look at the SIs and if you add up their prime contracting dollars, you take the top 25 SIs, they're probably going to win 50%, 60% of the total IT spending. So from a product perspective, yeah, you have 30, 60, 90 days, but you need to develop some BD approach to be able to walk the halls of the SIs to align with them, to be able to support them and sell through them. So as they're positioning themselves for the deal that's a year or two down the road, hopefully you're brought in and you have now a pipeline that you can put in your sales force that looks at revenue a year or two out, potential revenue a year or two out. But also from an SI perspective, you need to look at everything as how can I reduce cost on this immediately? What alliances can I build? What technologies can I bring? What solutions can I bring that'll affect the budget now, affect the cost of this contract now? It's very difficult to talk to an agency about how they're going to save money 3 years from now if we build this thing under this contract today. So looking out over the next 2 years, the opportunities, how you can reduce cost, and what alliances will help you do that, I think makes sense.
All right, a lot of basics. It's 9:56, and that brings our discussion to a close. We'd like to thank our guests, Cameron Luthy, Senior Budget Analyst with Bloomberg Government, Tim Larkins, Manager of Market Intelligence at the Immix Group, and Scott Lewis, President and CEO of PS Partnerships. You've been listening to a Federal Drive panel discussion on sequestration, coping strategies for contractors. The entire conversation will be posted at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.